at 63,357, your prison term has surpassed the 10-year socialization threshold. Inmate must attend and complete state order pop cultural reintegration for the years 1999 through 2011. To aid in your pop rehabilitation, the universe has assigned the following pop culture specialists, Lisa Ledesma and Peter Vinson. Do you agree to these terms of release, inmate?
Yes, I do. And thank you once again for this opportunity. It means a lot for me and my family.
Okay. So, Devin, let me ask you this. What do you know about The Simple Life with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie?
Ooh, you know what? I watched that in prison.
Oh, yeah?
I did.
Let us know about that.
Yeah.
Was that 2004?
What, the show came out in 2004? The show came out in 2003, but One Night in Paris came out in 2004.
I'd never seen that. I liked...
While the show was at the height of its popularity, and I figure that Paris Hilton is a cultural figure that we need to talk about for 2004. I think this is the year in which she was most relevant.
See, I watched the show for Nicole Richie.
An OG Richie head.
She was attractive during that time period.
No, she's very... She's actually aged... Well, at least the last... I haven't seen her for...
Plus, they were, like, out partying and shit, and I was, like, of that age. So I was like, yeah, this is sweet. How old are they? I'm under the impression that Paris turned into, like, a douchebag, right? Is that a thing that happened? No?
I don't think so.
I would say the opposite. She's come out... She's... In fact, I mean, this goes along the... Like, it's come out that she's, like, playing a character. I mean, we kind of all knew, right? She was... I don't know if a lot of people knew that she was playing a character. Have you seen the documentary that she did or whatever for YouTube?
No.
This is Paris. No. Oh, she, like, breaks character in that, and she's just, like, herself. And it's really cool and interesting. She's actually a lot smarter than people give her credit for. She knows what she's doing. She knows how she comes off. You know what I mean? She's very self-aware. And you wouldn't think that... Paris speaks a lot to... She's one of those people like Britney that speaks a lot to the way we treated young women and starlets in that day and how different it is from today. Because, right? Like, we were awful to those women.
Absolutely.
Her, Britney, just Lindsay Lohan. Oh my God. Amanda Bynes. Jesus Christ. That's a heartbreaker. Mm-hmm. It's like the whole era, dude.
Yeah. So, like, Lindsay Lohan and Amanda Bynes is very public. Flameouts would be, like, you know, a solid 4 or 5 years after this. Obviously, they're both people in the public eye at this time. But I would also say that, like, I don't think that, like, Paris Hilton, I don't actually think that she was ever in the type of social and emotional distress and situation that Lindsay Lohan and Amanda Bynes both ended up in, although those are very different situations as well. I would say that Lindsay Lohan is a person who didn't handle the effects of fame and being the privilege that the fame brought her at a young age, like never adjusted to that and had like drug problems. Whereas Amanda Bynes is obviously a person who has like persistent breaks with reality and has some sort of, I don't know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but she has a diagnosis that causes persistent breaks with reality of some kind.
Yeah, but I can't help thinking about that. Just the era of the way we treated women back then, because they weren't messed up yet, but we were fucking them up then. That was the time when we were fucking,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Like the Perez Hilton, you know, that whole thing, like how we treated famous girls, sexualized them to hell before they were anywhere. You know what I mean? It was a fucked up time. So yeah, their shit comes later, but this is just the era. But yeah, I don't know, man. That was the era. Cause I've been looking back. Cause when was Britney's hair shaving incident? That wasn't that long. That was like around this time.
No,
wasn't it?
She's on my list as well. So we could maybe talk to her when we get there. So Devin, let me ask you, like, how much The Simple Life did you watch in jail or in prison, rather?
Not a lot.
Not a lot.
Maybe like half a season at the most. I don't know how many seasons it was on.
So it definitely started in 2003, but I would say that it was, I think, a success previous to One Night in Paris coming out.
What is that? Is that a different show? Like a spin-off?
No, we'll get there. No, we'll get there. Simple Life was based Hilton and Nicole Richie were friends. Nicole Richie was Lionel Richie's daughter.
Right, yeah.
Paris Hilton was one of the Hilton sisters, Paris and Nikki, who you used to hear before you heard about Nicole and Paris, you would hear about Paris and Nikki, these sisters who were heirs to the hotel, like fortune, heiresses rather. They were some of the first people that I can remember in a concentrated group in a concentrated amount of time that became household names for being famous.
I was like the first of the...
By virtue of any skill set, but because famous. There doesn't seem to be another answer to that question. I think you need to be equally mercenary and intelligent about how you handle your career in order to become famous for notoriety as you do for anything else. Like, just because you don't have a fundamental discipline or skill set that is your the thing you're marketing, you know, if you're like a rock star and you can like play the guitar or like write songs really well or something like that, and then lots of people can do that. There's lots of people who can do that, but very few of those people become rock stars. And the ones who reach the top didn't get there for by having the best guitar playing or the best songwriting. They got there by being the person who could do that thing well, that presented themselves in the most marketable format and was willing to put in the work, the time, the effort, and be intelligent about how they made connections and marketed themselves to reach the widest audience. And I don't feel that not having like a base discipline invalidates you as like a worthwhile human being. I think that if your personal identity is the art form you're selling, that I don't think there's anything illegitimate about that. I think that that's a worthwhile product to sell. I'm not personally fascinated with a bunch of people who do that, but I don't think that that like makes you like some sort of joke. I probably did think that in 2004, if I recall correctly.
Socialites have been like a thing for a lot. Like, there have been people who were they were always famous within the scene of other rich people. Do you know what I mean? Like within Hollywood, there would be famous to the other, you know, they threw really good parties or what, you know, whatever the fuck. They were rich, but they weren't necessarily household names. 2004 is also when Perez Hilton came out. Started. And he is the whole reason TMZ exists. Before Perez, there was no TMZ. Like, he really was a pioneer in getting us into people's lives. Like, now with social media, we take for granted that we're in all these celebrities' lives and shit like that. But pre-2004, Hollywood was like a whole world away. And if you wanted to see the stars in their element, you had to go to Hollywood, right? And like walk around, like you had to go be there. They had some like things where they would report on like the headlines of what the famous people were doing, but it wasn't like Perez who was reporting on their personal lives and making you feel like you were involved in their personal lives, which I think then Paris was one of those people that used that, translated that into fame, like household name fame.
Agreed.
So, like, you could count her among she wasn't an influencer because she didn't have... I would say Tila Tequila was the...
You know, I think that probably the first influencers were, like, honestly, people who got famous in, like, the 2000s scene kid, like, MySpace emo world.
Yeah, MySpace in 2004 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, when does MySpace hit? That's one of those things that came and went before I ever...
That's true. You didn't see MySpace at all. Yeah. So, like, yeah, pre-makeup, still making music, MySpace, like... scene kid rapper version of Jeffree Star, or like the girls from Millionaires and stuff like that. Like, that's kind of like the first like influencers, like people who got like super famous on like emo scene kid stuff on like MySpace. Like, that, like emo and scene kid culture did influencers before pop, like mainstream culture did.
MySpace, yeah, really. But yeah, but Paris was like she was a prototype of that. It wasn't, she didn't have social media, but she used the tabloids and that kind of stuff to be her.
She was a pen and paper version.
Yeah, there you go. A print influencer.
Influencer, yeah. She was an old-timey influencer.
Honestly, a lot harder, probably.
And that's how she started trends. I mean, she influenced pop culture on a daily basis. So that's what an influencer is, right? Somebody who's influencing...
driving culture in one way or the other.
So she really was doing that before technically anyone was doing that, because they're...
So the simple life is basically socialites and friends who are famous for no discernible reason other than their parentage and social standing. Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie have a reality show where they drive around the country making fun of working class people. That is genuinely what it was. It was called The Simple Life because they would like go and interact with like hillbillies and rednecks and like people with pickup trucks and like tailgating and like fairs and stuff like that. And like, if perhaps Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie weren't intentionally patronizing these people, the way in which the people who made the show would take the footage of them being culture shocked by how different this set of people's lives were and edit it in such a way and put soundtrack and sound effects and camera tricks into it in such a way that that made fun of them. I really, looking back on it, don't actually think that Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie were seeing these people and thinking, oh my God, you dirty hillbilly, I'm going to make fun of you. But the people creating the show were making fun of those people. And they were using Paris and Nikki and Nicole's reactions as people who were like, wow, your life is so different than mine, as the mode through which to make fun of them. And it was popular. But then in the midst of that, boyfriend of Paris Hilton's, who had a sort of very lo-fi, grainy, green and black night vision camera footage of them having sexual intercourse, sold that footage to a company that sold adult movies. And it became incredibly popular because she was somewhat famous. It was like, you know, they made fun of it on like Weekend Update and stuff like that.
Is that legal? They sold it legally?
He owned it and sold it to them, and then she said that he had ruined her life, and then he sued her for slander for saying that releasing the tape ruined her life. Then she countersued him for having released it, and they settled out of court.
Did she know there was a tape?
Yes. Yeah, she was having sex with him while he was holding a camera filming her. So she knew there was a tape. I don't know. I don't think she probably knew that he was going to release it. He probably knew he was going to release it. I think that when he made it, she was a socialite, and she was not yet a person with like a TV show and like a real, like, she was rich and she was known in her like socialite circle. She had not hit as a famous person yet. I think that the tape was made in 2001, but that tape made her more famous than even her reality TV show had. And it also made her reality TV show more famous. And it cannot be said, I think, that she would have reached the level of ubiquity as celebrity that she did without that tape being released. But I also know that she has spoken very candidly about how this is like the humiliating and awful and painful thing that will follow me for the rest of my life, you know, like, and it still hurt. She did, I think, make money off. I think that, like, you know, they were settled out of court. I couldn't get an exact number, but some sources on the internet reported something close to $400,000, which I think is in reality very low, both in terms of how much money it probably made and in how terms of how much money Paris Hilton like already had. I think that she donated it to charity. Yeah, that guy sounds like a real sleazeball. Obviously, she's not the first celebrity this happened to. That would be Pamela Anderson, or you could really say Madonna, and before her, Marilyn Monroe are two people who became famous, and then someone was like, oh, I know her. I took naked pictures of her when she was nobody. Who would like to print these? You know, so that's sort of the same situation. Again, it's not. It's a different level of, I think, it's a different level of intimate to have live footage of you having sexual intercourse than it is for there to be naked photographs of you. Either one is a violation, but it's like it's another level of vulnerability, you know, like, and by virtue of it being another level of vulnerability, it's probably it's another level of evil, probably. Another really interesting thing to put about this, I think, is that factoid that I keep on telling people that I think is so fascinating. You must remember that Kim Kardashian was Paris Hilton's personal assistant. That is a true fact. Kim Kardashian, when she was just the daughter of the less famous of OJ's two attorneys, she was Paris Hilton's personal assistant. She went there, did this, helped her do everything that she did, studied at the feet of the master, made a plan, enacted that plan, improved on it, and she became the most famous woman on the face of the friggin' earth, probably. And I think that when you look at how the puzzle pieces are, there's, I think, probably a level of intentionality in opposition to Paris Hilton talking about how this sex tape is like the painful, humiliating thing that will follow her forever. Kardashian was perfectly willing to make jokes about her sex tape in her SNL monologue last year.
Exactly. Mom, I am convinced it's not Kim Kardashian's sex tape, it's Kris fucking Jenner's.
I want to be clear, there's not anything wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's Machiavellian.
No, but there is something creepy about that. There is something creepy about your parent on board.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Is this kink-shaming? Because I'm kink-shaming.
What I meant is that there's nothing wrong with a person deciding to use plan involving making media of them performing an intimate act that they were like, yes, I'm down with this plan, and using that as a springboard to launch into some other kind of career. But I agree with you. There is something really creepy about your mom being part of the planning of your pornography. Oh, this is my mom. We're gonna do porn together. You know, like, well, she's not gonna be in it. She's just gonna be my boss.
She's gonna stand there and watch. Don't worry about it.
But you know, there's a through line to this whole episode. There's been kind of, so far, all the stuff we've talked about has all really had that through line of the way we treated women back then. Like, all this stuff is happening, and not a single man in any of these instances has been held accountable for any of this shit. Not Justin Timberlake for pulling off her top. Not that guy for leaking the nude. Not the fucking, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's very different. And it's weird because it's not only 2004, it's like 2014 too. Like, this is like 2020 on that this has changed. It's not, it's changed as of now, but pretty recently, wouldn't you say? Like, we were pretty awful.
I want to be clear. I remember telling jokes about Paris Hilton. I remember talking about how she was talentless and shouldn't be famous and is famous. Like, I remember saying, well, we should call her a porn star because it's the only thing that she's ever actually done or something like that. Like, I remember talking about her, like, every shallow, vapid, misogynistic way, laughing at her portrayals on things like South Park and stuff like that. My hands are not clean. It was us as a culture.
Are you tired of the same old vacations? Ready to try something different? Then pack your bags and get ready for the ultimate tourist destination, 1999. That's right, folks, boy bands, female pop stars, and rap legends. You'll go to the trendiest clubs and bars in town where you can sip on Zima and get to see the Backstreet Boys and 98 Degrees live in concert and dance the night away to Mambo No. 5 and Smash Mouth. But that's not all. Our package also includes a tour of Times Square on New Year's Eve, complete with the Y2K countdown. You'll get to witness history in the making and ring in the new millennium like it's 1999. And don't forget about the fashion. You'll get to rock baggy pants, oversized jerseys, and frosted tips like it's nobody's business. And with our state-of-the-art technology, you'll be the coolest kid on the block with your brand new flip phone, Instant Messenger. So what are you waiting for? Book your trip to 1999 now and experience a time of your life you wish never was. But hurry, spots are limited and this offer won't last forever. Visit 1999, the ultimate limited intelligence tourist destination. Book your trip now before it's too late.
When did Jersey Shore come out or whatever that's called?
2009, 2010, 2011. I used to watch Jersey Shore, definitely post YouTube. YouTube came out in 06, or 05, excuse me, 05. So, or maybe it was 06, excuse me. But I remember I used to watch Jersey Shore on MTV when they would premiere. I found it incredibly fascinating, actually. It was the first version of the old school reality TV formula that had fascinated me since earlier seasons of The Real World. The Real World was like, what if we put a bunch of people and put a camera in the room? And then over time, people were aware of the tropes of how this thing had worked. And like, they were too self-conscious. They knew that the camera was there. They were playing to the camera. But then there's like a switch that flipped. And Jersey Shore was the first version of that story where it was like, all right, so we've had, what if we put a camera on people? And then they sort of learned how to play to the camera and what we wanted. So it stopped being real. But what? Now, for the first time, what happens if we put the camera on the people who have been waiting their whole lives for the camera to show up? Because they watched this, and like, this has been their plan their whole lives. So not just that they're going to play to the camera, they understand what the game is.
They're
like,
living.
They have lived their whole life as though the camera was already on them. So like, what are they going to do? And it was like this sort of like crazy experiment for the first time again, like The Real World was.
They were like that first generation who would have been watching it as like a teen and like being influenced by it. And then they're the one, you're so right. They're the ones you put on there. Cause they're the ones that like, they know the tropes. They know about reality and they want to be part of it. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, put me on there. I have shit to, like, I'm crazy. Like, bringing it right back. It's called a callback, ladies and gentlemen. But the first two seasons of that show, so good. Just like Lost.
If you are like me and I am like you, then you are tired of getting too stoned at family gatherings and mistaking the potpourri for an appetizer. Now, I'm not an eating scientist, but since I found the Is Food app by Limited Intelligence Technologies, no longer am I left wondering, what is this? Food?
Disclaimer, app does not actually contain actual food, and as such, software and hardware consumed is done at one's own personal risk.
Alright, we're back. Where were we?
I got a couple things. I think that one that would mesh fairly cleanly with what we've already been talking about, if we could have like a theme, like an overarching through line of this episode, sort of about like
Lost.
yeah. an overarching through line about realism, authenticity versus fakeness or artifice, but authenticity versus artifice in media, and how it evolved through this era, the public sort of villagers with pitchforks and torches approach to like culture dealing with media figures who people seem to act like they've committed some sort of horrible crime and need to be burned at the stake when what they've done is not necessarily actually so horrible at all. So,
in retrospect, like a lot of the people are actually pioneers. Like we were clowning on them, but that's like most pioneers in any fucking field. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So another person who was famous in 2004 that a lot of people sort of questioned how legitimate it was for them to be famous, whether or not they should be thought of as a person who was worth paying attention to, was a singer named Ashley Simpson.
That sounds familiar. I don't know. Is she one of the Milli Vanilli people?
Yes, that is
correct. She wasn't really like that is doing
correct.
Her shit.
It's not correct, but you've obviously heard of her. Actually, she actually is, but it is different. It's different than Milli Vanilli, right? So Ashley Simpson was the younger sister of a girl named Jessica Simpson, who was a shapely sort of blonde bombshell lady with a voice that was maybe like a less famous Christina or Britney.
Right.
She was like one of the female solo pop singers of the late 90s and 2000s. Your Britney's, Christina's, Mandy Moore. I would put Pink in there too, although Pink was the sort of like slightly different, like mildly punk flavored, like, you know, like she had like colored hair and like a tattoo and stuff like that. The super commercialized pop of the late 90s and 2000s, you had boy bands and you had solo girls. So in the boy bands thing, you got Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, 98 Degrees. Remember that name for a second. O-Town, stuff like that. And on the solo girl side, you had your Britney, Christina, Mandy Moore, Pink. Like I said, I would put in this group too, even though she has her own sort of flavor. And then like Jessica Simpson. Jessica Simpson did that kind of pop music. that's pretty different. I would say very culturally important and I think underrated for how much influence she's had on culture. But Jessica Simpson became more famous for like a reality TV show that she had with her husband, who was the lead singer of 98 Degrees, the boy band we just talked about before. And once her sort of fame was solidified, her family decided to take another shot at fame, I guess. And her younger sister, Jessica Simpson, was a second-rate Britney Spears. Ashley Simpson decided she would be a second-rate Avril Lavigne, right? A mildly punk, mildly emo sort of flavored female pop star. And she, like you said, like is she like a Milli Vanilli? It's not the same thing because Ashley Simpson was the person singing on her records.
Oh, wait, I get it. I just got a memory. Did she do a little, like, boop-a-doop dance when she got caught? You know, like a little farmer, like, doop-doop-doop-doop-doop.
Yeah, so October 23rd, she was the musical guest on SNL, first performed the single Pieces of Me, and was set to perform the song Autobiography as the second song. As the second performance was set to begin, the vocals for the first song were heard again. Right. And that revealed to everybody that Simpson had lip synced her previous performance. And she did. When she realizes that it's happening, she does like a little like dance and like mugs at the camera.
Love that.
And the world exploded.
Why?
Because they decided that she was fake and not real. And like, did Elvis lip sync? Did the Beatles lip sync? That sort of thing. You know, like, does she play an instrument? As though like you need to know how to play an instrument to be a worthwhile musician.
It seems like when you're on stage, that's a lot different than actually, because you're like in a venue. Maybe you need to perform that night. You don't. That's still your vocals. You just can't necessarily deliver them yourself that night because of whatever reason.
Well, pop stars have like choreography to do. It's a show, not just a musical.
Yeah, because I would assume most of them did that, honestly.
Yes, it was another person that I think was famous that the world looked at and said, should she be famous though? Like, she's Jessica Simpson's younger sister. So does she deserve for us to even fucking consider her or whatever? And then she's caught lip syncing and they're like, oh no, fuck her. You know, tie her to a stake and burn her so that our crops will grow next year. You know, like, Where are the torches? Where are the pitchforks? Like, this is one that the rabble is going to tear to pieces. Largely the same themes and phenomenons that we've talked about a lot today. Misogyny is definitely a part of it. And also, so is this sort of obsession with, like, some sort of enforced authenticity that we want. People still say these things, although I think that they're not viable anymore. The idea that, like, well, if you don't, like, play an instrument or direct movies or write something, or if, like, you're not, like, there's not, like, a secondary art form to what you're doing, then, like, you shouldn't be able to be famous. If you have, like, mechanical assistants, there's people who talk about, like, there's no such thing as singers anymore because everyone's just auto-tuned and, like, all the beats are quantized and snapped to a grid and, you know, like, it just takes all the soul out of music, and, like, anyone could sound good with auto-tune, which is fucking bullshit. Auto-tune turns good singers into great singers. It doesn't turn bad singers into good singers. It can't do that. It's not capable of that. Everyone lip-syncs. Or it's like right now, everyone flipped out at Ronnie Radke from Falling in Reverse because he canceled a show on his tour because they didn't have his road crew lost in transit all the laptops that have the backing tracks for all their music. They're like, you're a rock band. You shouldn't need laptops. And it's like every fucking band in the world uses backing tracks because every band in the world that's huge has more instruments on the recording of their song than just the ones they're playing. They've got their own guitar overdubbed two or three times, and they've got bells, and they've got fucking, like, a choir, and they've got strings, or, like, an orchestra, or they've got, like, a bunch of, like, manual percussion, or there's electronic percussion instead of drums at certain parts of the songs and stuff like that. And all that stuff is on those fucking laptops. So, yeah, integral parts of the music that make it what it is, that make making that song possible, are contained on those laptops. So no, they cannot recreate what they do without them. And that doesn't make them lesser than. It doesn't make them not real musicians just because it's not the way Jimmy Page did it in 1975, you know?
As an older millennial, I agree. It's fucking bullshit. It's like when I go into, like, a restaurant, they're not even fucking cooks anymore. Like, they don't make the fucking fire. They didn't hunt that shit. You know what I mean? They didn't fucking slaughter that shit in the back. What the fuck is this? What is this fucking sanitized, fucking delicious meal you fucking setting? What? Get this out of here. That's what I say.
Yeah, when I fly on a plane, they have a belt that moves your luggage into the plane and off the plane. They used to pick it up and throw it in there, okay? Now they use a belt?
Fucking kids nowadays, dude.
I got an Uber. There were no Flintstones. Not a single. He was just pressing up. He just hit a pedal the whole time. These lazy kids.
I'd like to welcome you all for joining me today as I present Limited Intelligence's latest automated service station, the Gleeplop Shopper 2.0. The Gleeplop Shopper is designed with ease and use and speed in mind, as well as the added value of customer assistance and interactive small talk based on items your customer have purchased. Now let's take a look at the Gleeplop in action, shall we?
Did you find everything okay today?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Do you have any plans tonight?
No, not really. Just a quiet night at home.
It appears that you have a can of chili, eggs, condoms, cheese, bread, grapes. I am sure you know that this is an insightful buy. If one was sticking their dick in a can of chili, they would surely want a condom. Have a great day.
Why, I never.
A band that was an industry plant. Have you heard that term? That was not... So when we were growing up, they were all industry plants. That's all we had. Right? Anything was... We waited for the record label to tell us who was good and put it on the radio for us to hear. Like, that was their job, right? Was to find the good music and show it to us. And they were trying to find the music that appealed to the most people because that was always going to make the most money for them. Nowadays, that is completely different. You go out and you find your scene. You know, the artists make the art and they spread it, but, like, you go find your scene, your crew, and the kids nowadays get fucking furious when they think that a band didn't come together organically.
You know what it's like the title Corporate Rock from the 70s. Kids made, like, punk and new wave bands because they were mad bands. The Eagles and Journey and Boston and stuff like that were session musicians who had been put together by, you know, like, that met by working as songwriters or session musicians for the record industry.
Yeah.
Similar to that, I think.
It just proves to you that industry plant, which is their term for something like that, That was all the band.
Like, 1992, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and, like, Soundgarden and shit like that. Like, there was, like, a moment, like, a five-year period there where it was the opposite.
Yeah.
Radio was filled with rock bands that had started as bands rather than the other way around.
I don't know. I feel like the reason that grunge was so good and it was such a big thing, it was because a lot of those bands were, that wasn't normal. Like, for the bands to just come out, that's what Sub Pop was doing right. Sub Pop was actually finding real bands as opposed to a lot of the, like, the big labels. But what I'm saying is, I think you're correct. They were grassroots bands, but I think 2000s was just so, it's like the Las, you go to Las Vegas and you go to those, like, resorts where everything's beautiful, but it's all man-made, so it can't quite eat. You don't, that's how the music of the 2000s feels to me.
Like, this sort of plastic pop, these things go in cycles. You know, there's, like, the rejection of one and the other, rise of the other. Like, the 80s had this kind of stuff. Like, there's Tiffany and Debbie Gibson and stuff like that. Like, those things are there. And the early 90s, yeah, when, like, Nirvana was at the biggest band in the world, there was popular plastic pop music of that time as well. It's like, you know, it's, yeah, like New Kids on the Block or Color Me Bad or something like that. You're like, early 90s, shit like that is happening. But at that time, like, the first half of the 90s, it was common for there to be, like, organically formed group topping the chart in the hit making in the radio. Whereas in the late 90s, and especially in the early 2000s, it was not common at all. To actually finish this thing, though, I think it's sort of a meaningless phrase, really. There's always been, quote unquote, industry plants, there always will be. And an industry plant is another term for, like, talented, marketable person that record label found before you did. I'll say this, though. I don't think that you should be necessarily scared of a record label taking a marketable, talented person and then being like, let's put you out there and not necessarily lead with the information that we're backing you. What I do think is a problem is when a record label or some other entertainment industry organization or figure takes a person who's marketable, potentially talented, maybe not, but marketable, and says, all right, there is currently a grassroots organic movement of this. Let's change your haircut. Let's put you in different clothes and let's have you start a TikTok account and pretend that you wrote these six songs that fit that genre and see if we can get them to pick you up and make you one of them and their hero, and we can make a fucking mint off that. Like, that, I think, is probably
problematic. That does sound pretty fucking cringe and shit, though. Honestly, that explanation of it sounds pretty fucking gross.
This is why I've never liked Pink.
Pink?
Pink.
Have a bone to pick with Pink?
Pink has done this her entire life, dude. Pink has been Pink. Beware of Pink. Dude, she's exactly that. Every album that she had.
The nerve of her having range. How fucking dare she be some sort of... I'm kidding.
Then it's just constantly whatever. Like, I am convinced that she is just...
I'm not like a massive Pink stan, so I'm not actually trying to defend her. I just saw an opening to make a joke.
Doesn't write her music.
I don't know a lot about her.
There's a difference between people who write their own music and people who... But she does not write her own music. At least she didn't in her early days.
Okay, but wait, hold on a second.
Excuse me. I'm passionate about two things, okay? My love for Lost and my fucking hatred for Pink, okay? Those are two things we don't joke about.
We have to finish this out. So it needs to be said that Ashley Simpson, although there was a tremendous amount of skepticism, I think, about her as a singer because her sister had been famous before her, she had a hit and was really, it seemed, gearing up to have a career. And this SNL thing killed her fucking career dead. Damn. Like, she was gone the next week. Like, she was no longer a pop star within, like, days of this happening. It actually killed that shit dead.
For something that everyone else was doing?
Yes, Devin, for something everyone else was doing. Did you know that, like, Jessica Simpson's music career was entirely overshadowed because one time on her reality show with her husband, Nick, they were eating tuna salad, and she goes, I know that it's chicken of the sea, but is this tuna or fish what I'm eating? And it's like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, that is...
Is it chicken or fish? It's tuna. You said it was tuna, but it's called chicken of...
That actually happened. And, like, it wasn't... That's not one of those, like, made-up things they do, like, where they, like, set up, make up a scenario and, okay, act this out. You could very much tell that both the inquisitiveness on her face and the exasperated look on her husband's face were 100% real. Where he's shaking his head going, like, oh my God, what the fuck did I marry? You know, like...
But once again, it's just a moment that was just rare for the days. Because I think about today and the shit that happens on reality TV and YouTube and all that shit all the time. It takes so much to shock me nowadays. Like,
yeah.
somebody doing that now wouldn't affect me at all. Like, it would just be like, okay, they're an idiot. Like, I would actually today, Peter, I would call it cringe. I wouldn't even laugh at it. I'd be like,
wow, listen to your industry plant cringe. You're Gen Z through and through. You've got all the lingo. No cap. You know cap. You're Gen Z.
I don't even like the word cringe.
Dead ass.
No cap. I'm the goat. Dead ass. Well, we Gen Zs don't call it cringe. We call it cringe.
Really? Is that a thing? Cringe. Yeah.
Because honestly, bro, no cap, the word cringe has become kind of cringe, right, bro?
It totally has. It's super cringe to say things are cringe.
It's so cringe to say things are cringe. So choogy. No, I'm pretty sure only millennials say choogy. Because we're trying to be young.
Hi, I'm Greg Durkle. I started my farm with a vision of how food should be, fresh and local. Having grown up in a family, I spent summers picking up trash and living on the street learning how to live off the land and the benefits of local dumpster and organic food. You could say the very foundation is in my blood. One summer, after a lengthy inpatient stay for PCP, I was visiting my grandparents and I noticed the amount of fresh fruit they bought to juice and how much trouble they had finding quality produce in the local area. And that's when Limited Intelligence Farms was born, where Americans can have access to the freshest organic fresh squeezed juice available without even having to leave the comfort of home. No longer do you have to worry about shopping all day to find the perfect orange to juice, only to get home and discover that it is dry and mealy. But now there's a new way. With juicygrandpa.com, you won't have to worry about the moistness of your fruit. With multiple packages available, fresh squeezed juice is just a click quickie away. LI Farms is a subsidiary of Limited Intelligence Technologies Gravy Division. juicygrandpa.com by LI Farms, where crop moistness comes first.
Anyway, I want you to picture in your mind a very cool guy from 2004. He's ballin' and he has the tippy-top tech trends. Just, he's so cool.
All right, so this guy's got some money.
All right, this guy probably has, if he's very cool, a Razer phone.
Whatever this guy has in 2004, I'd be like, I'm about to roll this motherfucker. Continue. What am I going to get off this motherfucker? What's he got? He got a Razer phone? Damn, what the hell is that? Why do they call it Razer?
I thought you said a laser phone.
Like thin and shit.
He got a laser
phone? They got laser phones?
A Razer phone. It's a Razer because it's thin.
The fuck
after the Razer, they had the Sliver, which was like a Razer, but it wasn't a flip.
The Sliver?
That was a thing. Yeah.
Did they? That was a thing? It just kept getting skinnier and skinnier?
The cycles of cell phone popularity where it was about being small. And then it went back to being big. And then like it just goes back and forth. It's about smallest phones and then the biggest phones and then the smallest phones and then the biggest phones.
So the coolest phones that you could get this year, the Razer was probably the coolest phone that you could get, if you remember.
What can I do with this? Because up to this point, okay. I still can't do nothing on the phone.
A Razer had a 1 millipixel. You could ooh, take, so I could take pictures. Very, very grainy, small pictures.
Very grainy, awful porn pictures of Paris Hilton.
You could, no, not even okay. That. Worse. You could also, I believe you could surf the web for an unimaginable amount of money per minute.
Probably. Yeah, right. Yeah, you could.
It was just very thin. The thing about the Razer that made it really cool was it was sleek. It was made of metal. A lot of, mm-hmm.
Like a brushed aluminum sort
I
of
do like that.
Black. It really fit in your pocket in a way a lot. Well, before the Razer, phones were bulbous. I don't think there was another,
and
like,
plastic.
I think that was the first, like, flat phone and plastic, yeah. And they were mostly either a brick or, like, a clamshell type. They had the folding ones, but they looked, remember, they were, like, fat. They were like clamshell.
When did the Sidekick happen?
Sidekick?
That's the one with like the mini little thing.
Flip
that,
out,
it's like
yeah.
A keyboard that pops out.
In 2004, we were very much, we had the candy bar still going, the BlackBerry, which was basically the format that won. The BlackBerry. I mean, we didn't have the tactile keyboard, but just the one sheet, right? We were doing the flippies. We were doing the slide-out keyboards, I think, at some point, right? I don't know if we were quite there yet, but...
Like the phone that Neo gets like in the mail in the Matrix, so like where he presses down. The button and it goes pop, like pops down like that.
Oh, yes, totally. Yeah.
So like slides down. Was future shit. An era where we were trying to figure out, we thought that there was going to be, and you know, they're doing it again. There's a fucking Samsung flip phone now. But in 2004, if you were the coolest, hippest guy, you had one of those phones. You had an Ericsson or you had a BlackBerry. So I was going to say, this was the golden era of batteries life because you didn't have, you barely had a camera. If you had a camera, in fact, in this Time magazine article, they're talking about like, oh, cameras are sneaking their way into lots of things. GoPro was founded.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. It wasn't popular yet, but GoPro wasn't like started in 2004. So this is really the era. So, okay. One of the really popular tech thing you could get was, well, first of all, iPods were big. They didn't come out this year, but a lot of people had an iPod. Remember OG iPod? So you could buy for your iPod a flashlight / laser pointer that you could connect. So this was the vision of technology, right? That we would have this thing and we would add a bunch of little bloop, bloop, bloop. You could add a little camera.
I like that, little modules and stuff like that.
Like, oh, I'll buy a camera to attach to my phone.
DIY phone, dude. I love that.
Like, basically, what was really interesting to me reading all this was how we really did not conceive at this time that everything would be in a computer in our pocket. We still, at this point, were talking about what digital cameras were good. We were talking about which MP3 players were good. Which phones were good, and we were buying little dongles for each of those things. We were still carrying all of our media separately. DVR was just coming out, so like
no idea that you wouldn't need any of this.
No idea at this point. Nobody had an inkling that we would walk around with a camera in our pockets or like a computer in our pockets, basically. Like, we did not know. I don't think we really knew that. I mean, we'll get there, I guess, when Apple talks about the first iPhone, but until then, even then, they didn't know.
This podcast made possible by parents and potheads like you, and our sponsor, Ride Tight Gravy, the only fully portable gravy bath available today, made of interconnected chambers that attaches at hip and waist to create our famous gravy Ride Tight lock system that allows full gravy immersion while on the go. Say goodbye to the days of being stuck inside and hello to extravagance with the Ride Tight Gravy Bath. Ride Tight Gravy, in an ever-changing world, gravy designed with you in mind. Don't forget to use the code WXTY2ES124583.promo/.org.com at checkout and get one bottle for the price of two.
Another thing that came, it wasn't invented this year, but got very popular, Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Bluetooth, it's the next thing. I know we've been saying it's the next thing for years now, but trust us, in the coming years, you're going to see Bluetooth in all sorts of things around your house. Like, they're like trying to convince people that Bluetooth was going to be a thing, because at this point, it wasn't really in anything. There were a few phones coming out that had it. And so you could buy like a Jawbone. Do you guys remember what Devin, yeah. Did you ever see a Jawbone?
I remember people saying, calling that their Bluetooth. I thought that Bluetooth meant little earphone. That's what I thought. I thought that Bluetooth was just a term for a little phone that you stuck in your ear so you could answer calls by doing that and then walk around talking on the phone and confusing everybody.
I would have thought it was really like a brand of headphones. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's what I thought too. Like that thing, I was like, that's called a, you know what I mean? Like that little microphone that goes in your ear and goes, yeah, we were very, because we were all very on the fence about Bluetooth in this time. This is, it's all gonna start to change basically after 2004. We really, I cannot stress how much we are on a precipice.
Precipice.
It's kind of crazy, dude. It's very weird. Like, us millennials.
No, it's definitely going into a whole new realm. I missed the lead up. I'm just in the realm. Jumped through a portal.
That's what's crazy to me to think about this. Devin went into prison, and people barely had cell phones.
So
and he
crazy.
Came out, and we all had computers in our pocket.
Pagers.
We all had computers in our pocket. Like, it was like, what the fuck, dude? He missed this whole era where you used to have in your pockets, you had a fucking iPod or a Zune in your fucking pocket so you could listen to music. You had a phone. Even in 2004, you had very specific, you had each thing did its job. You didn't use your phone to take pictures. Like, your phone could take pictures, but we didn't use them for that. That was like, it was basically in 2004, a camera in your phone was a gimmick. It was not something that you seriously would take, like, pictures you wanted to save forever with. Right, Peter?
Exactly.
Welcome to Prison Etiquette and Deformed Decorum training programs. Prison Etiquette and Deformed Decorum focus on social and dining etiquette skills, which help build self-confidence and fosters respect for others. Our specially designed, captivating, and interactive training curriculum promotes the awareness that social presentation and proper behavior are important in the development of highly respectable inmate. Always remember,
proper etiquette is important even when kept in small quarters behind a solid steel door for 23 hours or more per day with little to no contact with other human beings. Today's lesson.
If you borrow something, take care to return said item in its original condition at the agreed upon time. A violent fee may be imposed for this violation of etiquette.
Did you know about two-way pagers?
I'm gonna say no, because I had a pager.
Did you know about two-way pagers?
No, what the fuck's a two-way pager?
They had like a flip-up screen and keyboard, and you could send like basically text messages back and forth. And they had those like before
cell phones
came out with like text messaging. And then even afterwards, like you'd hear like rappers like talk about their two-way.
About the two-ways.
Yeah, like in rap songs. Talk about like a two-way pager, and like even when cell phones were a thing, for some reason it felt like a more luxurious technological item.
Here's the thing: this is how far we've come with technology. Is that when I went in, I had a canary yellow pager, right? It's just a pager, just receives a numbers on there that I can call back. It has no messages. For people that don't know what a pager is, it's literally just a number I get. Then you find a payphone and you call back this number. But my pager bill was more than I pay for two smartphones now.
That's crazy. That's insane.
I paid more for that pager that did nothing than, yeah, think about that. That's fucking...
This podcast is powered by LI Technology. When you're looking to give your business a crippling disadvantage that traditional AI companies just won't offer, think limited intelligence. Intelligence that offers comfort in an unforeseeable future.